Well, volunteers need apply. The European Space Agency is looking for volunteers for a Mars test. Yep, they want volunteers for a simulated human trip to Mars in which six crew spent 14 months in an isolation tank. They will live and work in a series of interlocked modules at a research institute in Moscow. How come nobody's getting us involved in any of this? We'll be back with our roundtable discussion on Coast to Coast AM. Richard Hoagland, of course we have to go back to the moon, but why don't we just jump ahead and go straight to Mars?
Well, as Rick's going to point out, we actually could do that. When this new policy was hammered out between Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and a whole bunch of other people in, again, secret meetings and presented by the president in January 2004, a number of people wanted to go directly to the moon, to Mars. They basically... You know, I mean, you had one guy on the show, Mr. Zubrin, Bob Zubrin.
Bob Zubrin, right.
And we're very unhappy about going to the moon. The problem is that with the risk-averse NASA, where you're not going to take big leaps, what they want to do is use the moon as a test bed to kind of test out all the stuff before you go off to Mars. And, of course, this now brings in my perspective, which is that the backdrop to this entire conversation is missing a crucial set of data points, which is... The moon and Mars are nothing like NASA has been presenting to the American people for the last 30 years. You know, I'm about to come out with some astonishing data, really amazing data, which everybody can verify because it's on the web now. It's on official NASA websites. The guys inside, the real folks, are leaking this like a sieve so that the people will get what they've been kept from getting for 30-plus years. And there's extraordinary things to be found on the moon, extraordinary surprises, which we don't even have to wait for the vision to give us. The first new opportunity will be in 2008 with this unmanned lunar reconnaissance orbiter, which is a spacecraft loaded with a very exquisite camera in a close orbit around the moon. And if we point it at the right things, you're going to see astonishing glass structures and cities and buildings and all the stuff I've been saying is there for years and years and years. It's there, folks. It's there. And the book I'm coming out with will show it to you in spades.
And you've got the backing of Ingo Swann, too. He says it's
there.
Well,
he said it from his remote viewing decades ago, but obviously you can't take that to the bank. But you can take NASA photographs that you can actually verify, that have a source code that you can go and look at on the web. I believe, and, you know, David may fight me on this, Rick, maybe less so, but I believe that the reason that it's taking us twice as long to go back to the moon now as it did when we didn't know what we were doing back when Kennedy said, let's go do it, is because NASA knows exactly what's there, the folks at the top, and the White House as well, and this is a false front Western town. We do not intend to go back. We do not intend for the program to succeed. We actually, when I say we, those at the top, want it to fail. They want it to look as if they're trying their best, but it actually is not going to work. And David can give you now some very important specifics about what NASA is planning and how even the rank-and-file mainstream rocket engineers that he talks to every day, without knowing the hidden agenda that I talk about, are looking at this plan and scratching their heads and saying, what is wrong with these people? It isn't going to work. And they can't obviously figure the next part, which is somebody doesn't want it to work. David?
Well, the plan that NASA has to go back to the moon involves making hardware, which are spinoffs of the shuttle. So, you know, for the sake of brevity and being fairly simple, they have a smaller Ares-1 rocket and then a bigger stack Ares-5 rocket, which most say is not doesn't have sufficient propulsion to lift the mass that they need to take to the moon. And this is coming from lots and lots of different engineers. Even former astronaut John Young has made comments about this. This is not a secret that there are real, genuine concerns that the architecture for going back to the moon is just simply inadequate. And this has given rise to lots of engineers who really design rocket engines and rockets all the time in the contractors and in NASA and in other programs to come up with alternative ways of taking the existing shuttle hardware and turning it into a method to take us back to the moon. One that Rick can talk about is Direct-2. There are others called MACS and others. But, you know, as long as Congress is cheapening out on the purse strings here and not giving NASA an adequate amount of money to really do the job right, and we have to sort of take from Peter to pay Paul
right.
in developing, you know, spin-off type of architecture from the existing, we're looking at how do you, you know, create the rocket, how do you do this to be the most efficient, the most effective, and to get the job done the quickest. And when you said before the break, why don't we pool resources, why don't we do this and that, well, we've got a law called ITAR, which is actually the acronym for the International Traffic in Arms Regulation, Title 22, Chapter 1, Subchapter M, and this law prevents an American anything, company, individual, government employee, no matter where in the world you may be located, from sharing technology with a non-American, including our allies.
Well, aren't we doing that with the ISS, David?
If it is approved technology or in the public domain, or it goes through the permission process, it can be shared. But it is lengthy, it is timely, it is costly as can be. Big companies like Boeing and Lockheed have departments of lawyers that deal with ITAR. SpaceDev, a great small entrepreneurial rocket company managed by Jim Benson, who's been on this show in San Diego, did a merger with a rocket company in England, our ally, about 5 years ago. ITAR forced the reversal of that measure, of that merger. He could not talk with his counterparts, even American citizens, in England because of the ITAR law. And so this is run by State Department. It is really a huge barrier issue that needs some attention, some modification.
Absolutely. If we're not going to put the money into the program, then we should at least share the resources.
Well, you know, if you're even a spacesuit is on the ITAR list of forbidden topics. I have professor friends at the University of North Dakota who are also living and have dual citizenship and residency with other countries, and they have a real issue about doing spacesuit research at lower cost locations in other countries because the spacesuit is on the ITAR list, and nobody can afford to go through ITAR registration on a lot of these different items. But what's happened is this whole process, this mechanism, Ares-1, Ares-5, going with the CEV, going to Orion, all this mechanism that we hear every day, and nobody can even keep it straight. There are people out there who are saying this is just not going to work. We're taking it in our own hands. One of the more voiceful programs, and Rick is helping to take it directly into the hands of Congress, is the Direct-2 program. And I'll just let Rick talk about it because this is amazing that people are trying to do an end run to get real good economic producing rocket hardware to take us back to the moon cheaper and a lot faster.
All right, Rick, Direct-2.
Direct-2 is an excellent alternative architecture to go to the moon and Mars. I'm going to read you a couple things here that's similar to what I read on Dr. Livingston's program, which will introduce the public to what Direct-2 is. Let's talk about what NASA wants to do. NASA wants to launch the Ares, which is one large solid rocket booster with an upper stage. As John Young has said, the astronaut, it has serious problems. It costs too much. It's underpowered. You know, they keep reducing, attempting to reduce the weight of the CEV because the rocket is so underpowered. Well, Direct-2 presents a completely different architecture that's much more effective, much more, actually cheaper. You can get to the moon faster and get to Mars faster. And it uses basically the same architecture that we have now with the Space Transportation System, the shuttle. I'm going to read a couple things here. This is from the introduction on the directlauncher.com, which is the website, www.directlauncher.com, in case the public wants to go to it. This is from the introduction, Direct Space Transportation's Derivative Version 2. Direct is an alternative approach to launching missions planned under NASA's new mandate, the Vision for Space Exploration. Direct would replace the separate Ares-1 crew launch vehicle, CLV, and the Ares-5 cargo launch vehicle, CALV, with one single Jupiter launcher, capable of performing both roles. This architecture completely removes the cost and risk associated with developing and operating a second launcher system, saving NASA $19 billion in development costs and a further $16 billion in operational costs over the next 20 years. That's a minimum figure, George, $35 billion. It could be actually much, much larger than that.
Yeah, and it would probably double.
Probably, could be. And you can do a lot with $50 or $60 billion. Direct single launcher system would use existing space transportation, a.k.a. the space shuttle facilities, and hardware to lift over 48 tons in basic configuration. I might mention that 48 tons is actually much, much more powerful in the sense of payload lifting capacity than the space shuttle or any other present U.S. Booster system. And the second version, which would lift up to 108 tons with an upper stage. This approach introduces many key benefits, such as optimum use of existing NASA and contractor experience base, equipment, development cost, upgrade paths, early return to the moon, and shorter gap after the shuttle retires over the current Ares launch vehicles. I think it's very important because another thing we have to remember, when NASA retires the shuttle in 2010, they're going to put thousands of people out of work who were originally working on the shuttle. This system mm-hmm. will maintain the vast majority of those people. Now, people say, we don't want NASA to become a job struggle, but we don't want to have to put thousands of people out of work that can get us to the moon and Mars either. This would be an effective, important use of maintaining those jobs.
And they have the knowledge. They know how to do this.
Obviously, and we're going to lose that expertise if we don't maintain all those employees at NASA, whether it be at the Kennedy Space Center, Johnson Space Center, whatever facilities are going to build this.
What happens, Rick? Let me ask you this. What happens if that happens? All these people get laid off, and the Chinese make offers to these people. They've got to live. They've got to take care of their families, and they make it so lucrative. Is it possible that Americans would go to work over in China and build
it? It's not only possible, it may even be probable. I mean, these are highly skilled workers, and if they can find a job doing something very similar, they're going to work for the Europeans. They're going to work for the Chinese or whatever, I don't know the exact who they exactly work for, but there's a high probability we could lose a lot of our expertise. Look what happened in what was the old Soviet Union after they, phased down for a while at least. Many of their nuclear facilities and their Thai technology, a lot of those people went to other countries. So, yes.
I still think that's going to haunt us, too, by the way.
I think it might. But I also think that the direct system is so important, George, because it's much less expensive. We have a Congress now that's Democratic. I'm a Republican. This is not a partisan issue. I'm concerned about people being, let go at the Kennedy Space Center. I'm concerned about the cost. And most importantly, I'm concerned about a system that actually works. I think Ares 1 is just not, like John Young says, I don't think it's going to work. I think that vehicle is non-workable, or at least very, very hard to work from a technical standpoint. With this rocket, we can get to the moon, several years before NASA. We can send up the first CEV, the first manned flight of the CEV with this system would occur in 2012 at its present level of NASA funding. That's years before NASA wants to do it. We can cut at least 2 to 3 years off the first lunar mission. And I have a letter here from Steve Marston, who is one of the Stephen Messgen, who's one of the people that actually works on the Direct-2 system, one of the editors of the proposal. And he sent me an email, and he said this. He says, if we're talking about the date for the first man landing on Mars, he says, if we push the lunar landing downstream along with all the equipment and press forward with habitation unit and advance low boil-off stage for Mars arrival and departure, we could do it by 2018, maybe sooner. We could launch the first manned expedition before the lunar mission. Now, that's an incredible statement. A lot of people believe that it's much more difficult, almost impossible, to get to Mars. But with this particular system, the Direct-2 system, if we phase down or dephase some of the lunar architecture and phased up the Mars architecture, we could actually get there before the return to the moon.
George, let me jump in here, okay?
Go ahead, Richard.
What David and Rick are describing in a very mainstream, very conventional perspective is something radically wrong with NASA, the gap between what I like to call the words and the music. NASA, in the form of the president, made this grand announcement in 2004, we were going back to the moon and then on to Mars, a vision for space exploration. Mankind is an exploring creature, the nation has to be first, all the usual stuff that's said. Since that pronouncement, NASA has created an architecture to do this, which is the most expensive, the most cantankerous, the most complicated, the most failure-prone, the most underpowered. In other words, everything they have done has given a lie to the vision of what they say they want to do. And a situation has arisen which has never developed before, Bob Zimmerman notwithstanding, in the history of NASA, which is, you know, remember, I lived through Apollo. I was a consultant to CBS News. I've been a NASA consultant. I know what happened back in those days because I lived through it. And you've never had in that era when John Kennedy said, let's go do this, and in 7 months they had designed all the spacecraft, all the boosters, the Saturn, the Apollos, the service module, the lunar module. They'd given all the contracts to Grumman and North America and all the subcontractors. 400,000 people got together across the country to create the Apollo program, and within 8 years, 9 years, accomplished John Kennedy's vision when we didn't know even whether you could land on the moon or sink into the deep lunar dust that Tommy Gold was predicting that the lunar mare were really composed of.
We also had a group of Germans and Wernher von Braun.
We had brought talent over, and the Saturn V was basically his vision. We had geniuses. Now, what Rick is talking about is that there's a group of engineers, a basic grassroots revolution inside and outside NASA, George. This is, I'm not the only rebel that comes on the air and talks about what's wrong with NASA. These are people that work for Lockheed Martin, that work for Boeing, that work for Northrop Grumman, that work for all the aerospace contractors, as well as for NASA itself. And they've all gotten together in their spare time, and basically out of the engineering that they do day after day after day in their day jobs, paid by the U.S. taxpayer, either through NASA or in terms of contracts, they have put together these alternative proposals for a radical different engineering rocket system that would use the shuttle-derived technology so you keep all those people employed, which is a key part of this whole equation. You also have tried and tested hardware. It's been what's called man-rated. It means that it won't blow up on the pad and kill more astronauts because it's been used again and again and again. The most dangerous part of the shuttle system is hanging that bird off the side of the big external tank and having all the foam fly off and hit the heat shield. Mm-hmm. With this system, it's basically back to you put the rocket underneath the spacecraft, you put the spacecraft on top, you don't care what happens to the insulation because there's nothing for it to hit on the way down. And what is dramatically interesting here is you've got this grassroots revolution of engineers, rocket scientists, as the cliche goes, who are basically saying there's a cheaper, better, quicker way to go do everything the president wants to do. And you've got NASA in the leadership of Mike Griffin, who basically says we're going to do it my way or no way or the highway. In fact, he has fired several people from the National Advisory Council who basically have said, you know, Mike, you're doing it the wrong way. And he basically pointed them to the door.
Well, why is he doing that? I mean, who are the companies? Who are the companies?
Conspiracy theory 101, which is somebody doesn't want, as David said earlier in the show, there are people that don't want manned space. And there's certainly, I think, people that don't really want us to go back to the moon because of what's there.
Who gets the money, though, Richard?
Huh?
Who gets the money if we go the Griffin route?
Well, the same people would develop the system in any way. It's not about
All right.
money.
Okay.
It's about a political agenda that's not being forthright. It's as crazy as Mike Griffin the other day standing up after his president has finally seen the light, goes to the G8 conference and basically says, what can the United States, meaning me, you know, the decider, do about global warming? And his chief at NASA, Mike Griffin, says, global warming? I don't see any global warming. We shouldn't be worried about global warming. In other words, something weird is going on, and it's back to what's the hidden agenda. It's not what they say. It's what they do, George, and they're not doing what they should be doing if they really meant going back to the moon and on to Mars. And Rick just gave you a thumbnail sketch from real guys who are doing real stuff with real engineering of how we could do it radically quicker, cheaper, save a huge amount of money, and make the country a lot of money in the process.
So maybe you're right, Richard. Maybe they don't want us to go back to the moon. More to come on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, our guest will be Jesse Marcel Jr., his new book, The Roswell Legacy, as he talks about his father, Jesse Marcel, the Roswell intelligence officer who described the Roswell debris in 1978 when he talked with Stanton Friedman. It should be one incredible program. We'll be back in a moment with our three special guests as our roundtable discussion on the space trilogy continues on Coast to Coast AM. David, give me your opinion on the significance. So we go to the moon. Big deal. I'll take the devil's advocate for a moment. Why? Why even go?
The ability to take us to the moon, to set up a camp there, to start learning to live in space and on the surface of the moon, changes and transforms everything we do back here on Earth. We're going to need energy, for example. Nobody's taking a barrel of oil with them to the moon. We're going to need to do all sorts of medical procedures to keep people healthy and well. We're going to need to solve some really serious radiation problems. We're going to need to solve some bone loss and calcium loss problems directly applicable back here to Earth. What we do in space is transferable back here to us. And when we push the envelope, and we're able to create in a very hostile environment in space things that will benefit us back here, that is the total plus. The other issue is, remember, the money that this takes is all spent right here on Earth. There is no bank of the lunar South Pole. The money is, you know, being circulated here and being multiples in our economy. We're creating the jobs here on Earth. People out there, listen, you got kids in grade school and middle school, in 10 years, 15 years, they're going to have high-paying, technology-oriented jobs because of the space program.
David, let me interrupt.
Exported to India.
Let me interrupt just for a second. Back in the 70s, George, there was an economic study done by Chase Econometrics, which was connected with the Chase Manhattan Bank, and it did an economic analysis of the amount of money the country had made. You know, you hardly ever think of a government program making money. It usually spends money. NASA's unique. NASA actually makes the country money. Unlike almost any other government program, NASA is an investment. Anyway, Chase did an economic study, and they found that there was a multiplier. For every dollar that NASA got from Congress, from the taxpayer, it returned $23 to the American economy. So the multiplier was 23 to 1. So you take $20 billion, which is what it cost to go to the moon in 1960s dollars, you multiply that by a factor of 23, that's how much richer the country got because we went to the moon. And then we stopped doing this. We stopped investing in the fundamental technologies. I mean, when you go from the shuttle back to Apollo, doesn't that tell you something about where NASA went wrong? You're not inventing the future and investing the money and making the money, you're making the country more money?
George?
Go ahead, David.
It's David. I did a paper about this for conferences because I was really getting tired of fielding the question from general audience people is that, you know, space is a waste of money and we've got better uses to do with it on the ground and all of this. So I decided to track a dollar spent on space through the economy as compared to a really successful entitlement program and an infrastructure program that made the money, that made the government money. So real quickly, I did the school breakfast program. It's very, very successful. That was my entitlement program. My infrastructure program was Hoover Dam, makes a ton of money for the country if you back it out of the Western coalition that it's part of. And then I had to really look hard for a good space program. Only one. The Apollo. By Apollo, I mean all the effort to go to the moon, Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo all combined. Here is what I found out. The school breakfast program, really hard to track results. You couldn't do any studies because how can you do a blind group where you don't give them any breakfast? So you know, forget that. Plus the fact as soon as Congress says no more money and that last money goes through the pipeline, the program is over with, end of benefits. On the infrastructure program, if you quit putting R&D and repairs and maintenance into Hoover Dam, it's not going to last very long. And ultimately, Hoover Dam will silt up, and the generators will go offline, and you'll have a big mess on your hands. It takes money to feed it. 35 years after Apollo was over with and no money was spent on it, it still shows up in the economy. It created wealth. It created wealth not only through the multiplier, and by the way, the technology specific multiplier in the medical field had multipliers of over 350 to 1.
Wow.
And the government programs that tried to check that couldn't verify it because at the time their computer programs couldn't deal with the variables. Not because they were wrong, but because they just couldn't do it.
Gauge it. Yeah.
And when I interview people on my show and I said, what turns you on to space? And they're doing business ventures, they're starting rocket companies in Mojave, they're doing all sorts of things that are employing people and putting money into our economy. Way over 50, 60, 70% got the bug from the effort the United States put into going to the moon. A space economy is a wealth builder. It creates jobs that we all want for our families and ourselves into the future. And something is wrong that Congress doesn't get this. I put more blame on this with Congress than I do with NASA.
Well, how much, if we didn't have the Iraq war right now, how much would go into NASA?
Nothing what more. Would the,
no, I don't think.
Really? Do you mean the mindset
change.
Wouldn't
that's
change?
That's my perception. I think they'd blow it on something else. They'd give it to an entitlement program.
You believe that, Rick?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think the Iraq war has been handled very badly. I think it was a good idea in some sense for national security reasons, but I think that the way that it's been handled has been very poor. Possibly there could be more money, but George, it doesn't make any difference whether there's the Iraq war, if it's, it didn't happen or not. We should be spending money regardless of what else we're doing on the Earth. Here's another thing. I wanted to go back to one comment about Direct 2, because Rich had brought up about Dr. Griffin. And it isn't just thousands or hundreds of engineers, and I might mention Direct 2 was originally developed by the Marshall Space Flight Center. It is a NASA concept, and it's been modified over the years. But it isn't just hundreds of engineers at NASA, Boeing, or Lockheed that are working on it now. It's Dr. Griffin himself that's made a statement which seems to support Direct 2. Let me read you a comment that Dr. Griffin made in May 2005, which is on the document, Direct 2 document. Quote, this is Dr. Griffin, the NASA administrator. As NASA administrator, I already own a heavy lifter in the space shuttle stack. I will not give that up lightly, and in fact can't responsibly do so, because any other solution for getting 100 tons into orbit is going to be more expensive than efficiently utilizing what we already own. And that's exactly what Direct 2 does. I mean, he's almost becoming a supporter of Direct 2 there. That's a direct statement. That's a good way to say it. That's a direct statement of what Direct 2 does.
Without him even knowing it.
Yeah, the problem is he's had amnesia, George. He forgot he said that. He forgot he owns a heavy lift launcher that can make all this happen, keep all the shuttle people employed, get us to the moon much faster, get us to Mars, and do everything the president said he wanted to do, not on this incredible wimpy time frame.
Well, Richard,
sneak it in.
Isn't anybody telling him?
Well, yeah, but he's not listening.
He doesn't listen.
He's firing the people that come in the door and say, Mike, you're doing it wrong.
This is, again, where I think David and other people are right. This is where I think NASA's bureaucracy is involved here a great deal, and there's too much bureaucracy. We talked about ITAR and the bureaucracy associated with this launcher system that they've developed at Ares is too much bureaucracy. It's a bureaucratic mess, in my opinion.
What would Sean O'Keefe have done? He was the person before Griffin. What would he have done with this program? I mean, Richard, I remember you slapping him around a long time ago.
The reason is, and this goes back to something David said very early in the program, Sean O'Keefe was a nice guy. He actually, I happen to know a NASA guy, I've known him for many, many years, who was a really good friend with him, and I found a lot about Sean that I didn't know before. The bottom line is Sean has a heart as big as the world, and he can't stand the thought of losing another crew. So he is incredibly risk-averse. Remember what happened 2 days after the president stood up and said to the nation, the Columbia astronauts died for a reason. Man must explore. I'm laying out this new vision. Sean O'Keefe, his administrator, pulled the rug out from under him, by canceling the shuttle visit to the Hubble and the repair of the Hubble Space Telescope. Remember that?
I remember.
On the 16th, 2 days after the president had made his great announcement. And, you know, this kind of made everybody wonder in the country, well, wait a minute. If NASA is so risk averse that they won't risk astronauts to fix the most important scientific instrument of our time, an unmanned telescope that has become basically the first love of every school kid in America. I mean, look at those incredible Hubble pictures.
I know.
There's never been a satellite, an unmanned spacecraft, George, that has had a fan base. You know, if Hubble could read fan mail, it would be getting more fan mail tonight than Paris Hilton in her jail cell.
And almost as much as Santa Claus.
That's right. So what Sean demonstrated was that he was not built of the right stuff, pun intended, to be administrator, because he couldn't stand the idea that Americans could die for a cause. Now, NASA is no less important to the future of mankind than the men and women who are serving in Iraq tonight, who are being put into harm's way to serve a national purpose and a cause. And if you're going to explore space and conquer it for all of mankind and make the Earth system bigger and to put our eggs in more than one basket so that if something were to happen to the Earth, the human species would survive, which is the long-term ultimate objective of all of this, although it isn't a direct objective, you've got to take risks. And there isn't an astronaut in the space program tonight, including the men and women upstairs that are in orbit right now, who wouldn't say that if they died tomorrow, the program should not go on, because they know they're serving a higher purpose. What the people who are managing them seems to have forgotten is that, as Kirk said during one of the Star Treks, you know, risk is our business. That's the reason this starship exists. The reason NASA exists is to take risks on behalf of all of us, and NASA has forgotten, and it has become bureaucratic, it's become ossified, it's got arteriosclerosis, and that's why you've got this grassroots revolution of engineers taking NASA's own concept, which I'm very glad that Rick pointed out, it came from Marshall, and they're trying to get Griffin to pay attention and to do it the right way, and he is turning a deaf ear, and my question is, why?
In Star Trek, we had the Federation.
Yes.
Why don't we have it here?
Well, because we're paying all the bills. All the other countries that we are working with basically have put minuscule amounts into the ISS compared to what the United States has put in. I don't think this current administration really wants. I mean, I've had some input from some sources that tell me that the last thing that the current administration wants is to have cooperation in going back to the moon. And, of course, I know why, because of what's there, of what's waiting, which is stunning. When you see these pictures, George, you will be blown away. I've shown.
All right, I'm looking forward to that, because, you know, we've talked about it, and that's important. But I still think what's happening is, you know, if our satellites are knocked out, Richard, we are out of business. This nation has gone from landlines to satellite technology.
Absolutely.
With minimal backups. I think this country has made a decision to spend its resources, maybe even black ops, to build that space patrol we've talked about, so that the main thrust is to protect, defend, and maybe attack satellites. That's what I think the space program is.
Well, of course, that opens up another possibility, which we haven't discussed up until now. And it's the whole Gary McKinnon scenario.
He's convicted in Britain, right?
Hacked into NASA's computers, said he found evidence of a secret space program, and the entire weight of the U.S. government and legal system has landed on him like a 40,000-ton elephant to put him away for 70 years for doing a little, you know, pot smoking and computer hacking in his spare time.
If they extradite him, they're going to get him.
Yes. Now, suppose. And I'm just going to raise this as a possibility. Suppose NASA isn't the only game in town. Rick mentioned a moment ago, in answer to your question, that even if we did not have Iraq, we should be doing space to the best of our ability. Space limps along with something like $16 billion a year. Now, to most Americans, certainly most Americans listening to us tonight, $16 billion is an enormous amount of money. Actually, when you compare it to other things we're spending money on as a culture and as a nation, it's really pocket change.
It's pocket change.
It's,
I agree.
You know, we've spent hundreds of billions on the Iraq War. And what do we have to show for it, except a lot of folks hate us, and we've increased the problem of terror, and we've increased the problem of incursion on the homeland, et cetera, et cetera. We spend an enormous amount on the DOD just to maintain conventional forces and a nuclear arsenal. And, you know, this country, when it is serious, it spends money. That's the one thing we do. We throw money at a problem. The fact that I've looked at the budgets for NASA over the last 15, 20, 30 years, and they maintain a constant, actually, they've decreased compared to inflation, tells me, if nothing else would have told me, that NASA is not the only game in town, that there is a secret space program. It's probably not using rockets, and that's why Griffin is doing what he's doing, because that's his job. His job is to make it look like he's serious, but to keep us down on the farm, because there's another group behind the scenes doing the real work that we're never going to hear about.
You may be right. They may be the huge black triangles we see. They may be everything going on. David?
Well, I just came from the Responsive Space Conference, and the Air Force was there in force, Space Command. The Army has huge interest in responsive space. And I got a chance to talk to a lot of the generals and a lot of the people. They're really looking hard for really quick turnaround vehicles that can get troops into space or get hardware into space to defend satellites. If there is the black program that Richard is talking about, and if there is a group of vehicles or a way to get into space without the use of rockets, either this group of people doesn't know about it or they are ready for Hollywood. And I'm not smart enough to know. I mean, I have been around people who I have later found out are involved in intelligence and are, as people say, spooks. And I would have never, ever guessed it. And sometimes it's hard for me to still even believe what I've heard today, that they do have that background. So I'm not the guy to go out there and say there's really a black ops program.
Well, let me.
I'm open-minded because here's the bottom line to me is, and we haven't really talked about a lot of stuff like what goes on in the alt space or the new space community and the effort to build, you know, rockets in the private sector and the kind of talk that goes on about engines and fuels and the idea that what is in theory and on paper only is actually real, and therefore in a business plan we can count it as real. So please give me my $5 million and I'll go out and make all this happen because it's already real, and yet it's just an aloof theory. This whole world with space, from NASA to the alt space arena to all of this, I'm almost ready to check into the damn asylum where I think everybody will be sane. I have several friends that we chat about this stuff all the time. I share comments with Richard and with Rick. I'm telling you, this is the craziest world. There's no rational explanation for the way people from NASA all the way down to some of the rocket builders I know to behave. This is just not the way you behave to get things done, to go from point A to B to C.
Well,
or to go
parallel,
get money.
To paraphrase Sherlock Holmes, when you have eliminated the possible, you are left with the impossible. And I've looked at this whole landscape, David and everyone, and I have come to the conclusion that not only have we been lied to in terms of what NASA has found, but we have been lied to in terms of what NASA exists to do anymore. That NASA is the false front Western town. The Potemkin village is like the magic tricks. Remember David Copperfield, his wonderful magic?
Mm-hmm.
It basically is designed to keep us focused on the shuttle, the station, the problems and all that, while the real program goes on. And in terms of your Air Force generals, my intel friends have this wonderful line that I keep saying I'm going to commit to a bumper sticker. The lie is different at every level.
Could be sleight of hand. Phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.